Get comfy.
Cheers.
Cheers. Welcome to Art Smack.
Welcome to Art Smack season two. Who am I?
Who are you? Who the hell are you?
Who the hell are you? And what where do you get the audacity?
It's who do you think you are?
The plant's obviously not happy.
Who do you think you are? And where do you get off?
Where do I get off? Delusion. So I'm Annie Taylor, friend of Jerry.
Friend.
We use that term loosely here.
Frenemy of Jerry.
Frenemy of Jerry. Fan of Jerry. We'll get into that later. I'm born and raised in New York, Manhattan girl. I went to school in Louisiana where I studied art history and business. Mm-hmm. I worked at an auction house and then a satellite fair of Art Basel. And now I work in a very glamorous industry called fine art logistics.
I love the way you say that. Oddly, you are so genuinely like one of the most glamorous people I know in the art world. And one thing that gets on Annie's nerves but deeply entertains me is how every time people meet you, they're like, but you're too pretty to do logistics
like and with shipping. With pity in their voice. You could sell art, honey.
But you could sell art.
Why are you in this lowly profession?
And what is your response to that?
No, thank you.
No, in all seriousness, I'm really glad to have you as a new co-host. Matthew just decided to say, fuck art. He's gone.
He has better things to do, like make money.
He doesn't care about any of our listeners or our watchers, which this is weird, by the way, guys. So for those of you that are listening at home, there's now a video component of this. So not that I'm self-conscious, but we have a camera in the room, and I don't know if I'm supposed to be looking at Annie or if I'm supposed to be looking at the camera, but I don't know. I see these stupid podcasts, like those financial advice podcasts, the people with like the headphones talking into the mic, and they're looking at each other, right? So we're going to act like a financial podcast and just look at each other, hype each other
deep
up.
Deep eye contact. Ew, okay.
Sorry. Stop looking
very intimate with a camera in this living room
Please
right now.
Don't look at me like that. No, you guys, welcome back. And seriously, welcome. Thank you for being the second co-host of Art Smack. Can't do it alone. I did try. Oh my God, this is funny. I have tried, you guys, to record the podcast alone. And it's really weird. Like, so many props to like whoever can sit in a room and talk to themselves for like an hour and 20 minutes. I did it for a little while and I was like, who am I talking to? Why am I talking like that? Do I talk like that? And also I look weird, like I'm just videoing myself. So it is very nice to have someone to talk to in the room. And Annie has been recently my art fair wingwoman and kind of art world wingwoman. I made a solemn vow to myself.
Oh boy.
I don't know. 2 months ago, I was like, I need to start going to more things because in my old, wicked, bitter age, sometimes I just don't want to pull myself out and like go to openings, go to things and support my community, but I need to. And so it's been very nice to have you along the way, which is why you are the best and kind of only person that I can really do a proper rundown of Freeze LA with.
Well, thank you. Big shoes to fill. Sorry, Matt. We miss you.
Yeah, Matt.
We love you.
Matt will be back. Don't worry, guys. We will avoid talking about the market in financial terms, unless Matt is here. I feel like, as some of you may know, I am going to NYU and I am getting an executive MBA right now, but I still don't trust myself to talk about finance. We were just doing like retirement planning, which isn't as soft and easy as that sounds, like some nice retirement planning. No, it's statistics on steroids. It's awful. So, I'm still like not fully comfortable parlaying my business school degree into my art school delusion that I've been living in for a long time, but we'll see. We'll maybe mix it in a little bit here and there.
So
I guess I should start by addressing the audience. Sorry, guys. Had to take a little bit more than a summer break, whatever that was. It was more like a 6-month break. It was necessary because, as I said, I'm going to Stern right now, and it is incredibly hard. I like to make jokes about it on the internet, but the jokes only come after the tears, and the tears are very real for me.
Very strong.
I did pass statistics. I did pass financial accounting. I did pass micro and macroeconomics. I took this hilarious but also terrifying class about ethics, which is like interesting, right?
Yeah.
So the art world is the only world where like everything has a soft, fuzzy edge. And nothing is ever firmly delineated into black and white, right and wrong. Surprise, surprise, in the business world, there are very firm rights and wrongs. And something I didn't know, you can be acting in good faith, ignorantly break the law, and you can still go to prison. It's so terrifying.
Tell them about the SEC and the smelling salts.
Oh, yeah. So we had like the New York district attorney come and speak to our class. And he was telling us, like, he spent an hour explaining in great detail what it would be like for us to be separated from our liberty, aka get arrested and go to jail. Because when the FBI is going after you for breaking like SEC regulations and laws, they don't throw the book at you until that book is done and written and you're 100% going to prison. So it is a common refrain that when a person is going to be arrested for white collar crimes, they bring smelling salts and they're prepared to emotionally deal with the white collar criminals, because those motherfuckers, when they get arrested, instantly know that they are 100% going to jail. Like, you're, it's not over. It's a win. Yeah. And so, you know, like, this is just very intimidating for me as an artist, where I feel like in the art world, they're always like, break the rules, be literally a rule breaker, live on the edge. Like, don't be, you know, don't be a rule follower. And in the business world, they're like, no, there are rules and there are rules for a reason. And you know what's crazier? Oh my God, this class really threw me like fully through a loop. So they started talking about like the personality traits of people who tend to commit white collar crimes.
Is it you?
Yeah. No, because they're like, they usually come from a broken family. Like,
oh God.
They tend to have like mood disorders. Like, they were going through this whole thing and I'm like, oh my God. I'm going to go to prison one day. Like, they really properly scare you, which is important. I mean, look, we have SBF rightfully rotting in prison. Uh-huh. A girlfriend of mine who went to Columbia, she was telling me that, I think she said she was going in like 2013, I remember, for their MBA program. And she was like, the majority of the people that had caused the financial collapse of 2008 mm-hmm. had all gone to Columbia Business School.
Oh my God.
She was like, we got screamed at every day to not break the law. And
that's,
I was
hysterical.
Like, oh, okay, that makes sense. And now, like, I listen to like financial crime podcasts and shit, and they're always like, and they went to NYU Stern. And I'm like, no, I don't want that to be me. It's so scary. But yeah, you know, besides having the shit scared out of me mm-hmm. in business school, it's just been absolutely so much. I have been in finance, and then I'm also taking a leadership course, which is interesting. And then I'm also about to go to South Africa
To solve their energy crisis. As one does.
Yeah, which is LOL, very funny, because it is a very complex, crazy problem. It's horrible what happened to South Africa. Do you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, about these two brothers.
Yep.
Yeah, it's just really, really dark. Anyway, so we're going to go and learn about it and visit like a lot of different businesses there. We're going to the Coca-Cola factory. It's actually pretty cool.
That is kind of cool.
We're going to the New York Stock Exchange.
Okay.
Like this week, I think.
Okay, fun.
It's very fun.
Yeah, that is fun.
It's also very, have you seen that movie Wall Street?
No.
Oh my God. It's
incredible. What am I doing?
Let's stop the podcast right now.
Sorry, listeners. Yeah. We have a movie to watch.
It's a very good movie. But when I stay over in New York on the weekends when I'm at NYU, my student apartment is in the World Trade Center, which is kind of dark.
Yeah.
And then I'm just like walking around there and energetically, it's very weird. And as an artist, as a person who's very sensitive to energy and has kind of I went to SFAI. Before that, I went to an anarchist art school in Norway. I very much grew up with the like, fuck money, fuck rich people mentality. And now I'm like in it and I'm starting to say weird things that would never come out of my mouth normally. Somebody was ranting to me the other day about like capitalism and how things are just about to change. Change is just around the corner. And I'm not trying to be an asshole, but I'm listening to them and a thought, like the most adult thought ever came into my head. Mm-hmm. The words, that is not how a market works.
Oh. Did you say that?
Yes.
Okay.
And they looked at me like the enemy. I was like, listen, I'm still like on your side, but like, that's not how a market works. But anyway, so I am learning a lot. I'm not trying to go over to the dark side with this education. I'm just trying to be a better artist and be a responsible artist and make good long-term business decisions. And also hopefully carve out a path that is replicable by other artists. And that means like having a strategy financially. So it's just been very, very interesting. And then on top of it, I got the best news of my life, which kind of feeds into it because I was sitting in Professor Joseph Foudy's microeconomics class a few months ago. And he was talking about the idea of sunk cost. And if you don't know what sunk cost is, it's basically money that already goes into a business decision. It's already there. You can never get it back. There's no PP&E to sell. That's it. The money is gone no matter what. So it doesn't really matter what you do. And he was talking about sunk cost. And he said, you should always be weighing everything for what is and is not a sunk cost. And he goes, for example, it's $55,000 per semester to go to NYU. And he was like, that is a lot of money, which it is a breathtaking amount of money and it hurts. He goes, but for example, if you were to get your dream job or your dream opportunity, you should never look at how much money you've already sunk into something. If the better thing comes along, you don't even think about it. You part ways with the sunk cost.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay, good to know. Also, I'm like, no, that, you know, because every person, another thing we learned in business school, sorry, I'm going to be very annoying, is like most people are risk averse financially. Most people are not going to ever be risky with their money. It's like built into our DNA. So we're kind of always hedging towards being like conservative. Like, how do we conserve? How do we save? How do we spend the least? And then when you do spend, like, I don't know how your parents raised you, but my parents are like, you wear those jeans until there's holes in them. Or you know what I mean? Like, you're not like, you don't just spend money and then move on and spend more money. You get the value out of the thing.
Of course.
So I was always thinking like, you know, I've really got to get the most out of my business degree. And obviously I'm going to just grind in it as hard as I possibly can. And then he's saying this, and then I literally get an email from UTA, United Talent Agency, which is an agency in Hollywood, and they had officially sent over like a letter of engagement. And I was like, whoa, this is a very odd moment in this class to have like just heard this whole thing about sunk cost. And then all of a sudden I get this amazing opportunity. So I actually am putting NYU on hold after this semester. I'm officially halfway through the program. I'm done with all of my horrific quant classes. And when I have time, I'm going to go back and finish my electives. Makes me feel a little bit like a quitter.
No. You have better things to focus on now. Not better, but a big life change.
Yeah, a big life change. And as a multimedia cross-disciplinary artist, truly, not just like, oh, I paint and then I make collages. I mean, really, I like to work in a lot of different mediums and a lot of different realms. Working with an agency is 100% the best thing for me. So I'm really excited because I've been doing this, all of this on its own for 6 years. Mm-hmm. And another thing, like I feel like I just have to get some things out of the way. We're cleaning house here. A lot of people are like, how are you an artist?
Yeah.
Which is kind of annoying and degrading. But I'm going to answer it like right here, right now for everyone, just in case people don't see it for what it is. So when I say I'm doing a lot of things, I'm not just posting things online. So I do post on Jerry Gagosian, but I also write a newsletter. Each one is always a little bit different. Mm-hmm. I also do big projects that are conceptual and have to do with money and the cycle of money and how we aid each other through our projects and through spending time together. So they're sort of, they lean almost into like a charitable or a grant-like arena where I've done things where I've raised a lot of money by commissioning a painting with an artist. And we also place the artwork like in a museum collection. And then we take that money and we turn that money from the sale into money for another artist. And I've also done projects like thrown a 1,000-person dance party or curated exhibitions. I mean, I do a lot of different things.
So where'd you get artist out of that?
But I get so like defensive sometimes when people are like, how are you an artist?
Yeah.
And I'm like,
insulting.
Like, I don't know. Like, The Canvas wrote something when UTA announced that they were representing me and they're like, we can't imagine what we can't possibly imagine
what this memer can contribute.
I've also written scripts for television. Mm-hmm. I've written scripts for film. I've gotten very close to having them greenlit. Back at the drawing board right now, trying to push another television series because that's how it goes in Hollywood. You know, you gotta push, start over again. They don't like this, change this. You know, times change. They're funding different kinds of projects. All of the deep Jerry Gagosian fans, they already know all these things, but I felt like I just needed to say that for people. No, I don't paint. That doesn't mean I'm not an artist because I don't paint. I'm a conceptual artist. It's idea first and then how it manifests comes later. That it might be material, it might exist in text, it might end up just being a big party. You never know.
Sign me up.
Yeah. So anyways, the business student who is an artist, who is now signed with UTA, that is me, your host for Art Smack. I hope that clarifies where I've been, guys. And I hope it also clarifies why we're back. I am going to be stepping away from school. I officially called a leave of absence. I can do it for up to 6 years and still stay in the program. So that's great. Hopefully it's just for a year or two. And I'm going to dive, you know, headfirst into art in a way that I've done at other periods. And then I sort of have pulled back and now I'm like ready to go. Yeah.
Do you want to talk about the Heritage Program or do we want to keep that a secret for a little longer?
I think we'll keep it a secret for a little longer, okay. But I do have a big project in 2025 that I'm working towards with English Heritage. That's all I can say. And we'll
wait with bated breath.
Yes, exactly. Okay, so how do we even begin to start talking about Los Angeles?
Oh, my God. Do we want to start with the big fair? Do we want to start with the parties? We want to start with Felix opening?
What was the first thing we did together when you got... I mean, besides the fact that, LOL, so Annie and I were staying in the same hotel room in LA at the proper hotel. And
cozy.
They were having protests outside of the hotel the entire time. So it wasn't the most pleasant place to stay because I guess there's some like union issues mm-hmm. or whatever. And so there were like people blowing like fog horns and
banging drums at 7 a.m.
and then all day long.
Yeah.
So we didn't stay there the whole time, but it was really funny because I had a dinner at Arthur Lewis's house, and Arthur is this incredible art collector who became the head of UTA's art space. And he had invited me along with my agent, mm-hmm. love saying that, Harrison Tenzer. And so I went to his house for dinner and I was waiting for Annie to come. And I walk into the hotel room. Every single light is on. Her phone.
Oh my God. Why are you saying
her
this?
Her phone is blasting a detective series.
Shh. What? Low stakes drama.
And she's just completely blacked out.
The last text message I got
was like, I'm going to eat pasta. I'll see you soon. I mean, I couldn't like wake her up. So I like turned all the lights off. Like, I like think I moved your phone and set it down for you.
Oh my God.
And then what was the first day? What was the next day?
Felix.
That was Felix.
Yeah.
What did you think about Felix?
You know, I love walking around and hearing how strong sales are and then 3 minutes later getting a PDF of available works from that gallery, you yeah. know?
And it's everything.
And it's everything is still available.
Yeah.
But, you know, the vibe was great. The crowd was good. We saw a lot of cool people.
Yeah, Felix is fun. Felix is kind of like the Nada of LA.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely has like the younger
yeah.
vibe. It's a little more thrown together
yeah.
in comparison to Freeze. Mm-hmm. It's very chill. People are day drunk.
Drinking. The yeah. pool. People are swimming. The vibe is great. The venue's cool.
Yeah. Sales, I just kind of heard from everyone and now it's coming out in the news too. We're just not good.
Yeah.
Which makes sense mm-hmm. because the costs for these galleries have not come down, right?
Yeah.
So like it's not any cheaper to participate in a fair.
Yeah.
Rent for commercial spaces is not any cheaper. If anything, it's higher right now.
Yeah.
Because commercial real estate's in the shitter still. So they're going to get every dollar of rent they mm-hmm. can, which means rent is incredibly expensive. And the galleries that participate in a show like Felix are mid-tier to
yeah.
emerging. So they're even if they're swimming in Trustafarian cash, it's still limited by comparison to like a gallery like Hauser & Wirth
yeah.
or something. And so these people do have limited funds.
And it's not easy to shell out $15,000 for a booth space.
Yeah, and they're spending $15,000 or whatever it is. And then think about it. That's like about how much each one of their paintings are on
yeah.
average.
Mm-hmm.
It's like $8,000 to $50,000,
yeah.
somewhere within there, whatever the mean of that number is. And people are just not buying at that price point right now. They'll buy very, very low stakes mm-hmm. artworks. I would say $3,000 to $15,000.
Yeah.
Maybe. But then, like I said, their costs are still super high
yeah.
to run the gallery. So they can't drop the prices very much. I mean, I've heard that sticker price is very different from actual price mm-hmm. right now. And I've heard crazy shit. I was talking to somebody the other day who told me that they got a 30% discount wow. from a gallery because they really need to move inventory. And friends of mine, I don't want to say who, people that are, you know, very good. We went to this one gallery, mm-hmm. very sort of trendy, popular, highly visible, well-loved, yeah. well-liked, sold nothing on day one of freeze even. So, you know, it's just a weird time. We're post that like pandemic mm-hmm. bull market.
Spend.
Yeah, there's so much remorse buying.
I know.
Have you heard of this?
Oh, yeah.
People are so pissed off because they're starting to actually look at what they bought mm-hmm. via PDF.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of trash. It was a lot of trash. People were just bored and speculating and buying like crazy. And now, 2 years later, people are really pulling back.
Yeah.
And I got really annoyed with somebody. I think it was at Periton. I was speaking to someone and I said, yeah, well, art collectors, art buyers are ultimately, they are affected by inflation. They are affected by high interest rates. They are affected by all these things. And they're like, yeah, but no, they're really not. Like, and I'm like, no, they are, because long term, all of these issues are matriculating through the system. And if you're wealthy, even if you're wealthy, that doesn't mean you're cash wealthy like yeah. that. And you will start to feel mm-hmm. things pull in and tighten. And if you're having trouble like making your companies run,
yeah.
at a certain point, you're definitely going to cut art spending.
100%.
Which is, I mean, I know artists, you know, I like to feel very important. So I'm not even like throwing this at artists, but like this, like, oh, art is essential idea, but is art essential as compared to like sending your children to a really good school?
No.
Most people will send their kid to a really good school before they're going to go and buy another painting. Yeah. And if it comes down to that, which it's coming down to that for people for a lot of things right now.
Yeah.
And these are quote unquote wealthy people that are having to just like rein it in and pull it back. And I love the vain art world who like still can't admit now that like, no, it's tighter times. The Chinese collectors are not here right mm-hmm. now. Obviously the Russian collectors, maybe they're in Europe still. I saw some in India. That was weird. But like people are not around. People are not buying. And then we're like missing our like crypto kings. Mm-hmm. Still can't convince people in tech to fully buy into yeah. art the way we want them to. You know, so we just are missing like swaths of collectors that were making up that glut that yeah. we had before. That buying glut.
So is this leading to a lot of flipping?
I don't know yet. I guess we'll have to wait and see in the auction season
yeah.
what happens. I mean, I know that if it were me, mm-hmm. I would not sell things right now because it's a sell low period
yeah.
because people are not buying.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I feel bad. I feel bad for some of my art friends who are having a really hard time because especially if like their prices had finally risen. Mm-hmm. I mean, imagine like you're an artist, you've been working professionally 10, 15 years, you want your prices to rise. Cause I mean, how many opportunities in a year does an artist have to generate revenue
yeah.
and income? If they're lucky, like 4 times a year,
yeah.
sometimes twice, sometimes once. So you want your prices to rise mm-hmm. and understandably so. And a lot of my friends whose prices sort of naturally trended up in price are very frustrated right now because their work's not selling.
Yeah, understandably.
So we're in an interesting moment right now. The good thing is, I've been around long enough to very, you know, big sisterly, like firmly, calmly tell everyone, like, it does not stay like this forever. Mm-hmm. This is just the cycle of mm-hmm. the market.
It will come back.
And right now it's in a downturn mm-hmm. and it'll be back. I mean, I would venture to say, sorry, when Trump gets reelected, because that is probably going to happen.
Yep.
You heard it here first on Art Smack. Yeah, when that happens, just like the art market did well, you know, with him. And I mean, there were a lot of tax cuts
mm-hmm.
that ultimately favored art, you know, the very wealthy. And then they had extra discretionary spending. And I'm not saying the entire art market was doing great because of Donald Trump. I feel like, don't cancel me for saying that. But I'm saying there were things mm-hmm. and choices and legislation that was passed that made it more appealing and appetizing yep. to high net worth individuals mm-hmm. to spend their extra money on art when he was president. And also in the same breath or in the same vein, I would say when artists are upset,
mm-hmm. tumultuous times lead to good art.
They make good art.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which, what does that say about the world? I don't know. Please don't hate me and cancel me for stating what I feel is the obvious, but you know, the most beautiful artworks tend to not be like when there was like the most wealth, peace on earth and happiness. Yeah. It usually comes from some level of
economic downturn,
yeah. but also like the spiritual battle mm-hmm. of like fighting the darker invisible forces, you know, like you sort of harness that energy. And personally, I think that is when art gets really good.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not asking for any more trouble from the universe, knock on wood, but I know when I've been in like really hard times and I've felt challenged by externalities,
yeah.
difficult externalities, that's usually when like I produce the most mm-hmm. and it becomes sort of the most profound. I mean, I started Jerry Gagosian in bed recovering from a deadly infection, you know, or it could have been a deadly infection. And then like this miraculous genius idea of Jerry Gagosian came to me in that time, you know? So, I mean, adversity is around the corner. Mm-hmm. Lord knows, I hope we don't have like a civil war. I've heard people saying that. I was just in India and I was talking to some rather high-powered politicians. And it was the first time in a while where I felt defensive about being American.
Mm-hmm.
And it reminded me of like when I lived in Europe during the Bush era and I would meet, you know, people that would be like, "You're American?" I'd be like, "Yeah." And they'd be like, "Oh, fuck you." And I was like, "Excuse
wow.
me."
Wow. Okay.
And they were like, "George Bush, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Like this war in the Middle East, it's all your fault. You know, you guys are warmongers." And I just remember being like, not everybody, actually he was elected by like one county of votes they found and, you know, that whole story. But like, I was like, no, I didn't vote. And I remember when I lived in Europe back then, I went through multiple phases. So I went through like one phase where I was like agreeing. Mm-hmm. And I was like, "You're right. Americans suck.
Yeah.
We suck. We're assholes." Totally. And then I swung to the other side where I was like, "How dare you? Don't talk to me like that. And not all Americans think like that yeah. and act like that." Mm-hmm. And when I was in India, it was kind of that similar sentiment was back where I had three separate people, "Oh, you're American. What are you, stupid?"
Oh my God. How did you respond?
The first time I laughed.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was like, "I am. Thank you."
Guilty as charged. The first time I laughed. The second time I did this thing, the psychology of what I'm about to describe to you, I would love to hear like a psychologist or a therapist, like tell me exactly why I did what I did. But this girl said it to my face, and I got like mad instantly, but I tried to laugh. Like I tried to fake laugh. And I did this thing where I like put my arm around her I was like, and like kind of squeezed her
I'm gonna kill you.
Yeah, like kind of squeezed her too hard, but I didn't do it on purpose. It was not premeditated, but I was like, don't talk to me like I'm an idiot, yeah. You know? And then the other time it was like speaking to, I don't want to say who it was, but like somebody very high up mm-hmm. in the Indian government. And he told me at dinner one night, like, yeah, you know, we're just like laughing. And we think it's hilarious. Like Donald Trump's coming in. They're like, we don't care. It's good for us. And if he wants to be friends with Putin, it's good for us. Cause you know, India is still trading with Russia. Yeah. And I was like, oh, they think we're a joke. They think it's funny right now. And I'm not going down the Biden path either, but it's really crazy that these are our two options, Donald Trump or Biden.
Yeah. Doesn't leave me with much hope. So one of our listeners, please run for office. Who will it be? DM us.
DM us with your political strategy. Yeah. You know, Stefan Simkowitz, mm-hmm. the patron Satan of the art world, mm-hmm. according to like, I don't know, Wall Street Journal or something. I'm pretty sure he lost in like the primaries today for the California Senate. He was running. Obviously that wasn't going to work as like an independent or something. He had some quote that came out yesterday that was like, people need to hear unpopular opinions. This is like literally his quote. He's like, for example, we need to just round up all the homeless people that are in the streets and send them to military camps.
Oh my God. Well, that's not going to get you elected.
I was like,
okay, cricket.
I mean, don't get me wrong. The situation in Los Angeles is pretty dire right now.
And New York too.
And New York. Mm-hmm. But that's probably not
That's not the solution. No.
So anyway, I can't remember how I got there. Oh, just talking about the political situation right now. It's a weird time, but the art will probably get interesting. Mm-hmm. I do think it's interesting too in these difficult times because complicated political moments usually mean there's also a large economic implication mm-hmm. and it does thin the herd in terms of like who is a quote unquote artist.
Yeah.
Not really, because being an artist I think is like a personality trait, mm-hmm. but who is a quote unquote professional artist. And that is totally fine by me because I think more artists should be teachers. I think more artists should be police officers. I think more artists should be architects. I think more artists should be social workers, should be serving food. Artists should infiltrate other industries. They don't all need to show in an art gallery.
Yeah.
Sometimes their gifts and their services in the world are better served mm-hmm. outside of the traditional art world. So it is always an interesting time when things get a little complicated. I remember 2008. I also remember when Donald Trump first got elected. A lot of people that I knew for a myriad of reasons left the traditional art world and went into other professions. That doesn't mean they're not artists anymore. It just means they don't sell like paintings.
Yeah.
And I feel like they're doing better for the world and they have, reliable paychecks.
We love a reliable paycheck. You need money to live.
Yeah. So I'm sure there will be sort of a natural thinning of the herd that happens too, which is fine. I mean, it's kind of happening now. Mm-hmm. People need to make money. Art sales are kind of shit. And if you're if you weren't already seriously established, mm-hmm. and seriously established, because it's very sad. Some of my friends who've been doing it for 10, 15 years professionally, it's crazy it takes that long in the art yeah. world to get established. But like they're having to figure out like what they're going to do next. And that's got to be really, really hard.
Tough. Yeah.
But as my yoga teacher, Nikki Doan, says, you know, hard experiences in life are your teachers.
Thank you, Nikki.
Yeah. Thanks, Nikki. So if you are struggling right now and you're an artist, you're not alone. You know, it's a very, very weird moment,
mm-hmm.
but it's been consistently weird. Sometimes I feel like it's been consistently weird since 2001, since 9/11. I'm like, every year it's just weird. Something crazier. Yeah. I'm waiting for like the good year yeah. to come, you know? Like, you know, people are like, oh, the 70s were great.
Were great.
Or like the 90s or something. I'm waiting for that in my adult life.
Yeah.
And it has just, every year has been fucking weird.
Well, maybe 2025 is that year.
Yeah. I don't, maybe.
Maybe.
After the election.
After the election. Maybe not. 2028, maybe.
Yeah. So anyways, all of that rant to say, yeah, the sales are not good.
Yes. Not strong sales.
Not strong
cool
sales.
Cool fair, but not strong sales.
But the reason is very common sense.
Yeah.
If you look into the world, you look outside of the art world, it's very obvious why it's a hard time for these people.
Yeah.
And I feel for everyone. I feel for the dealers. I feel for the artists. Mm-hmm. I feel for the collectors. I mean, I'm sure that... Poor them. They can't be spending right now. You know, it must be really
must
hard
be so
for them.
Tough. Life is hard.
No. But that was fun. And I hope that for the sake of everyone, that this situation resolves quickly. Freeze was fun.
Freeze was fun for you. Overwhelming for some.
Okay. Why don't you talk a little? Why don't you talk about Freeze?
So I've been going to art fairs for 7-8 years now.
Wow. You were in a diaper.
Since I was in a diaper. I'm a youth. I don't know if you know that. And I've been to fairs with Jerry before too, but I've never been to a fair with Jerry in LA, where apparently she's queen of the world over there. We could not go 3 feet without getting stopped and worshipped or harassed. And by we, I mean her. People would not make eye contact with me, which was fine because I was disassociating so hard because it was so overwhelming to watch the masses flock to you. She was sprinting that marathon, let me tell you.
Wait, is it really like that? Because I'm in
like
my body.
That.
I don't experience it like that.
You are a very strong person.
Okay.
That was my takeaway.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah. I do think of like art fair socializing, mm-hmm. like a form of not exercise, but like it's something you have to kind of be like in shape for.
Oh yeah. You were flexing those muscles hard.
Yeah. And also you have to remember everyone's name. Mm-hmm. You have to remember a tidbit about them.
Mm-hmm.
How is your uncle?
Exactly.
How is your dog,
mother,
Fifi?
That piece you bought. Fifi. How is darling Fifi?
Yeah. So it is a little bit of like a memory game. I did, how many times, this is a funny thing because I think you were counting. And it's really awkward. By the way, if you're listening and we had this interaction at Freeze, I'm sorry. But how many times did somebody say, we've met before?
Oh, my God. Well, I stopped counting at 7, but it went way higher than that.
Oh, you guys, it is so embarrassing. I don't do it intentionally. This is not a like, oh, my God, I'm better than anyone.
No.
It's just I go to an art fair literally every 2 weeks mm-hmm. of my life. So I do meet a lot of people. And I don't want to, I should maybe just be fake and start pretending that I know people when I don't.
No, it's authentic and it's fine. And you're always gracious about it and they always give you a pass.
Okay.
When you're talking to 100 people every 20 minutes, you can't be expected to remember every single person. They understand that.
There are some people who get pissed at me for it.
Well, relax. It's crazy. Or I love the, hi, Jerry. And you're like, okay, hi.
Hi.
Hi, you know my name.
Somebody did that to me once at a Starbucks in LA. Yeah. That was weird because it was like 7 a.m. and I had not had my coffee mm-mm. yet. And I was like, no.
Hello.
Hello. Have we met?
No, but it was good. I used to have a gallery in LA. And I have a very strong connection to California. Mm-hmm. I went to San Francisco Art Institute. I lived in LA for 6 years. So it is like a home.
Yeah.
A home for me. And I love people from Los Angeles in the art world. Mm-hmm. There's something different about California weird versus like New York cool. I'd love for you guys to weigh in on this.
New York grunge, black, California cool, tan, white linen.
Yeah. No, but like people in California are, it's a cliche, but there's like a granola hippiness. Mm-hmm. I'm not talking about the aesthetic. I'm talking about like the way of thinking. That is like super real for me. And it's very comforting. It's very comforting. I lived in SF for 6 years. I was actually born in Oakland. My dad's from California as well. It's just, there's something very familial about how people are. It might be all the pot smoke. I'm not really sure, but it's just like a chillness that I do not find in New York. New York, it is the opposite. It is like the day that the play opens every day in New York. And people are much more like on, mm-hmm. on. And I would say, California, don't take this the wrong way. People in New York are a bit more polished and like on alert mm-hmm. to present themselves. Whereas people in California are a little more touchy-feely. They want to know your sign. Mm-hmm. You know, they're more chill, literally.
Freer.
They're freer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not as self-conscious, mm-hmm. probably. And that goes for my friends that are art dealers. That goes for my friends that are artists. It's just a little bit of a more relaxed energy. So it's always nice for me to go back. And I don't know if I could ever live there again. Mm-hmm. Because the cops are on their way to get me and separate me from my liberty right
Smelling
now.
Smelling salts, they're coming.
But it is always very, very nice to go back.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whoa.
Wow. Someone's in trouble.
Freeze was, again, it was fun. Mm-hmm. I had a different perspective this year because I was invited to the collector's breakfast, which mm-hmm. I've actually never gone to for Freeze LA. I've gone to the one in London and I go to the one at Art Basel in Switzerland, which is really fun to go to every year because it's in the center of the Mezzoplatz mm-hmm. and everyone's like drinking champagne and eating oysters at like 9 a.m.
as one does.
Smoking cigarettes. Yeah. Like, do Europeans not get cancer? Yeah. I just want to like throw that out there.
They're stronger than us.
And they like still look hot.
They look great.
In their 60s. Glowing
skin. I know, smoking.
And like ski and hike. Mm-hmm. And like smoke. Yeah. And drink wine. I don't get it. Meanwhile, I'm like,
I have one McDonald's fry and I'm like crazy for 6 weeks.
Exactly. But no, I went to the collector's breakfast and it was not what I was expecting. It really was like all 70 of the art collectors that live in LA. Like, because there's not that many, mm-hmm. which is why I LOL at all these New York galleries that are fucking moving to LA. And I'm like, my brother,
yeah.
my brother in Christ, yeah. there are 70 art collectors max, and they are tied in deep mm-hmm. with the galleries that are already there. You're not like going to clean up.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't work like that in LA. Like these people have like long-term deep relationships, mm-hmm. you know? But yeah, so I went all 70 and they're older. Mm-hmm. Also, just like a thing that I thought was so funny. I was telling Dolly, like ChatGPT, to create images for me of art collectors looking at art in an art booth. And they made them all like hot fashion models. And I was like, no, you have to be like 55 plus. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're chic, but some of them are quite elderly.
Like established.
They're older. They're established. Mm-hmm. Yes. And they're really entrenched in this scene. And it's funny because I feel like I kind of know everyone. But when I went to that breakfast, I was like, oh, there was probably three artists there. There was me, Titus Kafar, and then the rest were all like art collectors and people on museum boards.
Yeah.
And they were in their own party, their own clique. And I was like, wow, this is a community actually right here. This is a community. And you could tell they all like love each other, have like histories. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there's drama that I'm just not aware of. But like, it really felt like, you know, the art world is like an elementary school, a middle school, and a high school, and maybe even a college, like all going on at the same time. And every single faction has its own queen bees and something different that it's aspiring towards. But when you're there, you're like, oh, this collector's breakfast has its own system of hierarchy. There are like mega collectors in here. And then there are what I would personally feel is like outrageous and kind of mega-y, but like for them, it is nothing.
Yeah.
Like this is just what they do. This is their lifestyle.
Every day.
Every day. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of art hoarders in LA. Yeah. That's one thing that was very apparent. So I went to that breakfast and I met some people, which was really lovely, really fun. But then we got to go into the fair even earlier. You guys, I didn't know that there was earlier than 11 for Freeze. There is a 10 a.m. slot where all the people from the collector's breakfast get to go in. And well, first of all, let me tell you, it's really fucking crowded in Freeze. So I cannot express how nice it was to have the whole fair like spatially for 1 hour to share it with 70 other people was lovely. But the number one thing that I observed, which is very indicative of where the market is at, is we walked in. I was with Arthur Lewis, so I was kind of tagging along with him wherever he wanted to go. 10 minutes into being there, I would say 70% of the people that were at breakfast were all in that one hallway where all the blue chip galleries were. Nobody was going to anything else. They all went to Zwirner, Gagosian, White Cube, Pace, like Hauser and Wirth.
Yeah.
They just went there first before they even like bothered to go see anything else. And it was in that moment where I'm standing and I'm like, oh, this is like an even other level of the art world. I didn't feel out of my depth, but I also just felt like I have no place here. Yeah. This is like, I am not relevant here. I'm not
on the totem pole all the way at the bottom.
100%, you know? And it was very interesting because normally like I'll talk to the senior directors at these galleries. I love them. You know, everyone knows I like idolize some of these senior directors because I think they're
the hardest workers.
They're the hardest workers. They're legends of the art world. They've made it go in so many ways. But like when I walked in, I was like, I am the least important person for anybody to speak to right now because all of the serious business is happening and like I would be getting in the way right now. So like nobody was really like talking to me, which was humbling, but also good to just take it in. And I think this moment tied into an earlier moment in the fair, which was I went to Magnus Resch's book launch for this book he wrote called How to Collect Art. And Pamela Joyner, who's a major art collector in Los Angeles, and Jeffrey Deitch, OG art dealer, were talking about their experience of how to collect art. And what was interesting is I sort of saw the way they described it unfolding, mm-hmm. which is Jeffrey explained that at a certain point, the American art world was all in one building on Broadway, including like the art shippers, mm-hmm. the artists, and the galleries. Like they were all in one building. And if a collector, which there weren't very many back then, wanted to buy something, they just went there. Mm-hmm. And he was like, that was 50 some odd years ago. He was like, now everything has built out of that very small community. Mm-hmm. He kept using the word community, community. And Pamela was talking about how she sort of collects and she thinks of the artists and building relationships as a way for her to build community. And she thinks of her collection as a representation of her community. And then I was there, like standing in that section of the art fair. And I was like, this is the most potent form. Mm-hmm. This is like the most moneyed, potent form of this quote unquote
community.
Yeah. And everyone was like very friendly with each other. Mm-hmm. There was no like, people were not introducing each other.
Yeah.
It was like seeing your family. Friend at camp,
yeah. mm-hmm.
you know, like, oh, and because there's an art fair every 5 fucking minutes, these people are just like, they're not even like making small talk, you know, they're just like,
saw you
jumping.
Last week, see you next week.
Exactly. Yeah. So that was an interesting observation. It's such an interesting world. I remember listening to an interview with John Baldessari once, and he was like, an art fair is no place for an artist. And while I personally don't agree because I became an artist because of art fairs, I can understand why art fairs would make some artists deeply uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. And as an artist, are you deeply uncomfortable walking around?
In an art fair?
Yeah.
No.
No.
No, I love it. Because for me, it's the same reason I love auctions. I love the energy. I love the insane idea that art is so real that it can take over and possess other people's lives and extract huge sums of cash out of them. Like, that is how real and potent art can be. And I like to see the physical manifestation of that taking place before my very eyes. It is alchemy. It is magic. Like, if you really think about it, like, where does art begin? It begins within the person, right? Mm-hmm. This is like electricity going on mm-hmm. in the brain.
Yeah.
And this electricity mm-hmm. causes a person to move their body mm-hmm. in such a way that they're physically manifesting something
that, out of their psyche.
Out of yeah. their psyche that could not exist otherwise from anyone else in any other time or place. And then that thing that they in turn manifest can grow and take up space on another plane mm-hmm. where it becomes almost like a religion and a status symbol for how other people govern and dictate and live their lives. How crazy is that?
Crazy.
Yeah.
Worship at the altar of art.
I worship at the altar of art.
Yeah.
Not money. There is a strong, you
there's
know,
there's a difference.
There is a, for yeah. sure a difference. And so I like to go and I like to see it happening. Mm-hmm. And I think my allergy to money and that whole like fuck the rich yeah. and fuck capitalism thing that I had when I was younger, I don't have it anymore. I've passed that on to my younger peers who can hold that. I'm not afraid of it in the same way that I used to be anymore. I just feel like you have to be educated about money mm-hmm. and what, you know, how you manifest it and what you in turn do with it. But it's very interesting to see other artists successful. It makes me so happy.
Yeah.
I like being successful. I like seeing my friends mm-hmm. who are artists being successful. I love seeing the tide rise and mm-hmm. a bunch of people getting success at the same time. I like watching my poor artist friends go from poor to wealthy mm-hmm. and rich and setting something up for themselves, for their future, for their families. Like, it is amazing. So I love going to art fairs for a myriad of reasons. But there also is like weird dark energy.
Yeah.
There could be some pretty bad people there. Mm-hmm. I've literally been around people before that, you know, their parents are warlords in Africa, or I've met people who, you know, profited off of World War II. Mm-hmm. And they are big collectors. I mean,
oligarchs, Pfizer.
Yeah. Yeah. You meet those people at art fairs too. And very cutthroat art dealers, mm-hmm. you know, and that can energetically be a suck.
Yeah. Taxing.
So I think the thing that I've learned is like to trust my allergy to mm-hmm. certain people. Like when I meet certain people or I have certain interactions, you know, listen to yourself.
Yeah.
And
trust your intuition. You know.
Yeah.
Should we talk about the dark energy party?
Oh my God. Yes. But you have to describe it first.
It's akin to like a frat party basement was kind of the vibe I was getting. There was no smiling. First, it was at Calvin Harris's house. So that was cool. We took a golf cart up about a half a mile to the house.
The driveway was a half a mile long, up a hill.
Mm-hmm. Everyone is smoking cigarettes casually outside, like all everyone, in black.
So many
every
cigarettes.
Every single person.
There was like three packs it's lit like the Mezzoplots. At any yeah. given moment, yeah. just wafting in.
All black, maroon lipstick.
Red wine drinkers.
Red wine drinkers, drug users.
Yeah.
Yeah. We didn't make it very long, though, needless to say.
Okay, but it's so interesting to me. I mean, you've been going to art fairs for a long time, but why, what made it feel dark to you?
Just watching the people interact and the way they brush shoulders with one another and who is deemed worthy of a conversation and who is loitering with who by the fireplace or in the corner next yeah. to the bar and, you know, who gets to cut who in line to get a drink. You know, it was just, it felt very high school.
Yeah, I wrote about the party a little bit. So it was hosted by Alex Marshall, who, if you guys have been following me long enough, know is the original Art Zaddy. He works at Christie's. He's a very handsome silver fox. And I guess he rented the house for the night, or maybe he knows Calvin. I don't know. So it was like in this big kind of empty mansion mm-hmm. feeling, and the energy, how do I describe it? Like for me personally, it felt like an art school party mm-hmm. that I really strongly remember going to, like where you were like, I don't know if anybody likes me because nobody's smiling and nobody will be nice and nobody yeah. will acknowledge that they've ever seen me before. Yeah. Like everyone's like a little too cool. Mm-hmm. Everyone's looking over your shoulder, looking past mm-hmm. you. It's very, very masculine energy too, yeah. which is interesting because actually that's how men tend to communicate. They don't do a lot of like eye contact. There's a lot of like side by side talking, which I think is always funny to observe two men speaking and they're talking to each other like this. I mean, no shade. I love men. I love Matt. But like, it was like a very masculine kind of like middle-aged people trying to throw an art school party mm-hmm. type vibe. I don't know. Personally, for me, that is not what I associate with a good time. Mm-hmm. Like, first of all, I love to dance, mm-hmm. but I also love like when people are joking yeah. and hugging and
a lively environment
yeah.
of friends.
And like the ambiance yeah. is good. There was like a weird red light
yeah.
in the room. Oh, you know what party was amazing that we should talk about is Bozama's party.
Yes.
But anyway, we did go to that party and I'll just finish. The energy was weird. There was kind of some snaky people mm-hmm. there. And I was so glad. This is why you're my wing woman, because I was like, I want to go. Sometimes I get embarrassed that I want to go because I'm sober. I don't really like being in like super loud places with like getting like cigarette and weed smoke blown in my face. Mm-hmm. Like I used to smoke. I'm not a smoker anymore. Like I just don't want like to be around that so much.
Yeah.
But I feel embarrassed sometimes to admit that because I feel like I'm weak or something.
No.
Being like, I don't want to be here. So I was really glad when you were like, no, let's go. Let's get out of here. I was like, yes.
We have to go to eat sweet treats in bed.
Yeah, we left there and ate cookies in bed. But we did go to an amazing party. Mm-hmm. So there's this queen called Bozama Saint John. Is mm-hmm. that her name?
I think so, yeah. Amazing.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm like, I worship her.
In awe of her.
You guys, just Google her. You know, she's like a half a million Instagram
followers.
I follow
her on Instagram, obviously. She's incredible.
So beautiful. Mm-hmm. And she's a collector of our friend Harmonia Rosales's artwork. Mm-hmm. And she was throwing a party in honor of Harmonia's painting. And it was like a dinner. And it was so fun. We met all these like women who basically used to run the rap industry. Yeah. And it was really, really cool hearing all their crazy stories and how these like beautiful, sort of soft-spoken women used to like boss around like gangster
rap. Yeah, and they were all calling it gangster rap, which yeah. was so funny. They're like, I work in gangster rap. I was like, okay.
Yeah. That was fun. The yeah. fashion was so good at that
Incredible.
Party.
We were not dressed properly for that party.
No.
No, we were so underdressed.
We looked like we were wearing trash bags.
Literally.
Everyone's wearing like fine fabrics with like beads on it.
And like 4-inch stilettos.
Yeah. Yeah.
We and were in like
Everyone
sneakers.
had a modeling career mm-hmm. at some point.
Yeah.
At that party. It was really great. And the meal was good. And
Harmonia is just the most talented painter.
It's crazy.
It's incredible.
You know, she's self-taught. And she studies like ancient techniques, mm-hmm. in particular old master techniques. Mm-hmm. She like makes her own paints.
Yeah.
She does everything. I mean, it's unreal
it's
how good she is.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you guys should check out her paintings if you haven't. It's Harmonia Rosales. She's great. That was a fun party. We skipped the wet paint party.
Yeah.
I'm sure I just saw like ArtNet posted about their own party, but I'm sure it was fun. Annie Armstrong is sweet. And I always think of those parties as more artist centric mm-hmm. than some of the other ones where you can feel they're sort of heavily leaning on like celebrity / collector mm-hmm. vibes. So we didn't really go. I was wanting to go to Benjamin Trigano, who owns M&B Gallery.
Yeah.
He throws the most iconic parties every time there's mm-hmm. an art fair, every time he has an opening, actually. And they're amazing because he has this really cool house with a huge backyard. Mm-hmm. And he's always really generous and has like tons of food and there's a big fire. And mm-hmm. it is a really fun LA party because he invites everyone. Like, I became friends with this man at this party at his house once. The guy was like this old Hollywood producer who was in his 80s. And he ended up living down the street from my house. And I used to like walk to his weird mansion in the Hollywood Hills. And we would chain smoke cigarettes and drink coffee. And he would tell me about all the like Hollywood stars he used to date. It was really fun. But no, Benjamin's parties are like very mixed company mm-hmm. in like the best way possible.
Yeah.
It's like Hollywood people, it's artists, it's collectors, it's like people that work in TV. It's just like a fun,
a true LA scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's always very fun,
yeah.
But it was raining, so
yeah.
we didn't get to go. I don't even know if that party happened.
Should we talk about Friedman Benda, Albert's Benda? That was fun.
Oh, yeah. That was a fun
that
party.
That was so fun.
Oh, my God. We sound like party girls.
I know. No, we're not.
We're not,
no.
You guys.
We stand there sober and we...
I drink 2 Diet Cokes.
Yeah.
I don't even smoke cigarettes anymore. So it's fun. I mean, it is fun because I get to see my friends.
Yeah.
I get to see all of the people that I've had different relationships with mm-hmm. throughout my weird career mm-hmm. that has spanned every position in the art world. So some people, they think I'm a curator and a gallery owner, and some people actually think I'm an artist. Some people think I'm insane.
I mean, you are.
No, but that was really fun. And I guess we're like roped in now to go to their opening.
Yeah.
which is going to be here in New York on
Thursday night.
On Thursday. Yeah. So we'll go check that out.
Yeah.
Did any artworks, I mean, it's crazy that we're like an hour into it. Did any artworks stand out to you on this trip?
I liked Vanessa German at Casman, those like rose quartz sculptures.
Love those.
Which I tried to take a photo of, and then Eric, one of their directors, walked out, and I think he thought I was taking a photo of him. So then I had to put my phone down and scamper away in shame.
That's funny.
Yeah. But I liked that. I liked Nissan Pei at Anat Ebgi. Mm-hmm. Those were the two standouts to me.
Oh, yeah. That was on like the cover of the New York Times.
Yeah, it was, right? So cool.
Shout out. Mm-hmm. That's amazing.
I know. Good for her.
I mean, there's a lot of other things they could be printing on the front of the New York Times. It's kind
like
of
you.
I always think it's amazing, and I'm not being a dick towards art, but like, anytime people in the world stop what they're doing to care about art, I'm always so touched by that because I'm like, surely there are other things, you know, we could
be doing.
Going
on. Yeah.
So I'm always like, yes, yes, art is winning. Yes. yeah, I thought, I'm trying to think what stood out to me. Oh, I really love Titus Kaphar's film.
Oh, yeah, that was spectacular.
So Titus, represented by Gagosian, also works with UTA. Mm-hmm. So I'm like semi-related to him now. Actually, by virtue of both names. He just made his directorial debut with Exhibiting Forgiveness, right? That's what it was called?
Yeah, exactly.
And I have to be honest with you, first 5 minutes, I was like just nervous for him. I think I was like projecting. Mm-hmm. I was like, is this even going to be good? Mm-hmm. Like, and what is this movie?
Yeah.
Like, is this just like tragedy porn and I'm going to just feel like shit the whole time? Mm-hmm. But no, it was actually really profound.
So raw. Lots of tears.
Everybody in that movie theater was crying.
Yeah.
But it wasn't crying in an unproductive way.
No.
I felt like the movie forces you to like deeply look at
yourself and your relationships, and it was so cathartic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I thought it was really great. And I don't know, I think they're shopping it right now, so some streamer is going to buy it, and then people will be able to see it. Or if it's screening anywhere in an art city near you, I would really recommend going and seeing it. It was really amazing.
Yeah.
It was really, really touching, really sad. Really sad. I cried. Oh my God, this is so embarrassing. I think I fucked my relationship up with him because I don't know him that well. I'd only been introduced to him like 3 times. And during the talk, he was like, if you got something to say or if this affected you, tell me how. And I was like, oh, I could tell him how it affected me. But like this idiotic thing happened where I just lost control of my body and started crying hysterically when I was trying to tell him how it affected me.
After she called me weak for crying during the film, she was like, you're so weak. I heard you sniffling over there. And then she gets up and sobs. Okay.
Oh my God. You know what that reminds me of? You know the movie The Notebook?
Yeah.
Okay. So I don't know why I have this thing. I get pissed off at anybody that I know crying in movies. I don't know why.
Why?
I don't know because I'm judging them for being weak.
Okay. Awful.
I know.
Awful human.
I'm just being
You're
honest
so
right
mean.
Now.
My friends are so weak.
No, I'm just like, but it's a weird thing because I'm like, I don't cry.
Mm-hmm.
No.
No.
I don't cry at all. I'm not affected by this.
I'm fine.
At all. So I remember when The Notebook came out, okay? And I went with my mom and my brother. My brother at the time was like in a heavy metal band, tough man, you know? And I remember he was crying and my mom was crying next to me and she kept doing this. She'd be like, and she would look over to see if I would cry. And I refuse. I fucking refuse. So I'm like,
Honestly.
Don't cry, Hildy. I'm like holding my breath.
Oh my God.
I'm pinching.
Just let it out. What is wrong with you?
I'm like pinching the side of my leg. I'm like, I'm not going to fucking cry. I don't cry. Don't cry. I do not cry. And I was like, I'm not even going to look at my mom. And I walked out of the movie theater so long ago, by the way. And I remember I was wearing like flip flops and I stubbed my toe.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I threw myself on the floor of an AMC movie theater, took my sandal, threw it across the room, and just laid there and cried. And my mom was like, Hildy, you have to get up now. I was like, it's so sad.
And a lesson to all, this is why we let our emotions out, okay? So when a minor inconvenience occurs, we don't have a meltdown.
So that's basically what happened in Titus's movie. I like heard you crying and like the people behind us
crying.
And I was like, these weak little bitches, these fucking babies, this isn't making me cry.
I am better
at all.
Than you.
This is fine. And then was not fine.
Clearly.
I think that night, didn't we just like, go to bed.
No, that was the night that we went to the dark energy party.
Oh, so yeah.
Overall, a rough emotional evening.
It was like insult to injury to go to that, but yeah.
But then Cookie's in bed, so it's fine. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank God we ended up going and staying back at the Sunset Tower, which is my LA home. And, you know, God bless them for the cookies in bed at the end of the night. It really just
elevates the experience to come home and have like, two cookies waiting for you.
I've had so many problems staying there recently. Last time I was there, it literally rained inside my bedroom. I like woke up to like the sound of just rain coming on my bed. The heat wasn't working when we were there.
You got stuck in the shower.
I got stuck in the fucking shower, and it was terrifying because I think like I'm sensitive to sound, and for some reason my Spotify started playing like really weird music, and it was like intense because I was naked and I couldn't get the fucking shower door open, and I was stuck and the door was locked.
So I couldn't get in to help her, and she's like, call a front desk, and I was like, my friend is locked in the bathroom, send help. And then it was resolved.
Yeah. So anyway, they really make up for it by giving us the sweet treats before bed. It really redeemed them.
Yeah. Thank you, Sunset Tower.
Thank you, Sunset Tower. Keep up the good work. Please get renovated.
Please sponsor us.
Seriously. But anyway, I don't know. I feel like we should wrap it up.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you want to say?
I want to say a quick thank you to everyone for tuning in for season 2, episode 1 of Art Smack. Yeah. And I want to say thank you to our sponsors, Aetna Fine Art Logistics. I have a wonderful little blurb from them.
Are you going to read it now?
Yes, of course I'm going to read it now.
Okay, here we go. I'm going to look awkwardly into the camera while this is going on.
And a huge thank you to our sponsor, Aetna Fine Art Logistics, the preferred shipping partner of Art Smack and Jerry Gagosian.
That is true.
We'll get into that story another time. From shipping to storage, with a specialty in art fair operations, Aetna provides a seamless one-stop shop for all your fine art logistics needs. You can find them at aetnafineart.com or Aetna Fine Art on Instagram.
Yeah, they're great. I shipped something with them recently. And they shipped me to Paris.
And we shipped you to Paris Plus.
Yeah.
Which we'll talk about next time.
Yeah. So anyway, thank you so much, Aetna, for sponsoring this episode. And yeah, we're going to try to bring you an episode at least once a week,
every
2 weeks mm-hmm. sometimes. Like there's going to be weird moments where maybe we're traveling.
Yeah.
And part of the reason this is a relationship of convenience, Annie.
Oh, sorry. God, clearly. bye.
Because Annie goes to all of the art fairs mm-hmm. and I go, we end up being really great wing women, sparring partners mm-hmm. when we walk around and we look at things. So it's exciting. We already have Art Basel in Switzerland planned for this summer.
Yep.
we're going to do the fairs here in New York.
Yep.
Is there anything else between then and now?
Just openings and...
And openings.
And openings,
she's going to force me to start going to openings.
We're going to be social.
Yeah. I'm
Thirsty Thursdays.
I've got to re-socialize myself. Mm-hmm. So if you see me out...
Don't say hi.
In New York, please don't throw wine at me and call me
And
names.
If you do, make sure it's white wine so it doesn't stain.
Okay. Thanks, Annie. Okay, well, this has been episode 1 of season 2 of Art Smack, and we will see you on the internet.
See you on the internet. Bye.
Bye.